Third hour at Aaron Donick and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great start to your week. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Elijah Campbell manning the board at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We head down to Titletown. That's what they're calling Tampa these days. He's down there visiting family after SEC Media Days. He's Tampa. Vince Ferrara. Yeah. Tampa Titletown, man.
They got Tampa Bay.
Is that what they're calling themselves?
Yeah. Champa Bay.
Champa Bay. They got all kinds of nicknames. Super Bowls, two back-to-back Stanley Cups, and the Rays, and appearance at the World Series. So things have been well on that market. Vince Ferrara, Sports Animal, WNML, and Knoxville now joins us. How's Tampa? Are you on a jet ski right now? Are you on a boat?
No. I mean, the temperature would lead you to believe that would be the smart thing to do, but now I just came from lunch with my mom and loading me up with just amazing home cooked meals again. So that's priority number one.
Sure.
In terms of activities, but Tampa's being Tampa, low 90s, heat index over 100, afternoon thunderstorms. It's what Tampa does.
Hey, in all seriousness, though, for both you guys, if you haven't seen it, and Willie too, go watch Tom Brady's speech that he gave at the ring ceremony. Like, it's awesome. It is something that everybody should pay attention to, just the message there. So I highly recommend it.
Since I haven't seen that, but I watched him with James Carden, the ride-along singing that they do. They played golf, and that was just so much fun, so cool to see him out of character. He's singing songs, and that's just amazing how Tom Brady just now in Tampa is letting this personality out for everybody to witness, and he's enjoying the heck out of himself. Good for him, man, after just being so stoic and robotic and about the Patriot way for so long.
Yeah. It's the face turn. He went from heel to face.
Well,
right.
I don't know if he's lost the heel tag. I'm not sure about that because there's still people that will forever dislike Tom Brady. But it is a direct reflection of, he is telling us without telling us how he felt about how basically he was kept under wraps for two decades in New England. True?
I would think so. You wonder how much of it is just, hey, I'm at the end of my career. Let's let loose a little bit.
Okay, fair.
I want to do the right thing. So maybe there's a little bit of that at play. But I think that has always been in there. Maybe some Patriots will say that's been Tom Brady, but maybe he just didn't put it out there publicly like he's willing to do now.
Yeah, good point. SEC Media Days is over. Unless they want to extend it another day to get Lincoln Riley and Sarkisian their day. I don't know if they've done that or not. Have they announced that they're going to extend it for a day?
Yeah, guys, I got to head back to Hoover. Vince, I'll see you there.
We got Texas and Oklahoma up tomorrow morning. Lincoln Riley will start things off. Thoughts before we get into that element, just your overall thoughts of the 14 teams that were at SEC Media Days this year?
I thought that it was really controversy-free. I think Eli Drinkwitz might have maybe had the most notable sort of shot at somebody else when he said that he hopes that it snows when Florida goes to their place so Dan Mullen can really have something to complain about. So
wow,
rare.
Yeah, but
by the way, Jimbo Fisher had a little shot too. He's like, "Well, I think some people in this league have already been doing NIL before NIL."
Yeah,
he did take that little shot.
Yeah. And when they brought up Texas and Oklahoma, he's like, "Well, yeah, why wouldn't they want to join the SEC?" So, I think everybody's plan was to just remove controversy. You had two players instead of three for every team. I think they need to maybe strategize day four a little bit more. You guys brought up Texas and Oklahoma. man, one of those or somebody marquee needs to be in that last day, because a lot of media take off, and it's kind of unfortunate because some of those players that maybe are more nondescript, you know, some good players there, but not household names, and, you know, the room is more than half empty in that main room, and, you know, there the moderator is asking for questions, and it's crickets, and he's having to fill in with his own questions to buy time for people to ask questions, and it was a little tough for some of those guys to have to be in there for that. And that's because we're not used to the players being in that setting, right? Normally there's the breakouts in that main room, or, you know, you can get a little bit smaller group in the electronic room. So people that are working on specific types of stories or angles, they can ask them in a smaller setting as opposed to bogging down everybody with your question that maybe won't be mainstream for everybody else might not care about. Like, I asked a fair amount of coaches and some players, you know, about things with Tennessee angles that I wanted to learn. That's something that everybody else didn't normally have to hear. I could do it on a smaller setting, and then I could put that information out. Or somebody writing a story on a specific angle, they don't have everybody else around the country now hearing that quote, putting it out before they have a chance to put it out themselves. So it's just those little strategy things that were a little bit tough. But, you know, I think it was controversy-free, and, you know, no one really stood out as terrible. I will say Brian Harsin from Auburn, he had a veteran-like a filibuster with his main room. He went 30 minutes and ended up taking just 3 questions.
Smart.
Yeah, he hit every topic out there in his opening statement. Then when he got a question, he'd go on for 2-3 minutes. Before you know it, no chance for some real tough questions. And so I think people were a little frustrated at that. But we've seen Ogeron go through the entire QD before. So that stuff will happen. But, you know, I thought it was a good week. Just need to do something with that fourth day to sort of spread it out. And hopefully they're not thinking, hey, let's spread this out to 5 days, because that's not happening.
Well, maybe it'll be a little bit – maybe there would be a lot more people in favor of that 5 days in Nashville as opposed to 5 days in Hoover.
That's a good point.
Yeah, which is 2023.
Just saying. And, oh, by the way, probably a much better setup. You know, the nightlife will be completely different. So,
but you know what, though?
There probably won't be too many media folks belly aching if they went 5 days in Nashville.
I hear what you're saying, and you're right, but I don't hate the setup in Hoover. I never have. I like how, Vince, you and I were kind of talking about this, that it's, you know, Radio Row where it is, and then you have the conference rooms upstairs. I mean, it's not a bad setup. It's just everything else, like the nightlife and, you know, all that stuff. Like, when they had it in Atlanta, I didn't like that setup because it was so spread out. They were doing press conferences over in the Hall of Fame. Radio Row was in the Omni. You had, like, a five-minute walk in between. So, I do like the setup in Hoover.
Well, they've outgrown Radio Row in Hoover. It's not a very good setup. Like, the main room and upstairs is fine. Downstairs is just not. It's not compatible to
it's
where it is
good.
Today.
It's not
just
good.
Not.
They had half the stations. They had 21 stations. We've seen them before with 41 where people are spilling out into
the
mall.
Food court. Yeah, it's just – Radio Row is silly. So I'm gonna disagree on the lower half, Chase. The lower half is not compatible. Downstairs does not.
And it was easier to maneuver and get to places with – I think it was 700-ish media is what I believe Jimmy Himes told me. And we've seen them go, you know, 1,100, who knows, maybe even 1,200, I think, is the max they've had. So that's a lot less people. It's more manageable. So you could breathe this time. I'll say one other thing about Radio Row that was a little bit better this year than maybe what you guys have experienced in the past is they scheduled every head coach to do Marty and McGee on the SEC Network in a room that you had to walk through a little bit of Radio Row to get to that conference room. So I think that was helpful. And I told both Marty Smith and Ryan McGee this, and I gave him credit for it. He was like, cool, we'll take it. Where it forced them to have to, when they came out, they would hit Radio Row afterwards. Josh Heupel probably had the most time on Radio Row, but I think that little force into Radio Row made a few more coaches available. Now, some of them would just do Atlanta and Jocks in Birmingham, and that's it. But I think it was a little bit better for activity on Radio Row this year than maybe it was last time we were there.
All right. Kudos to our boys,
I'd agree with that.
McGee and Marty. All right. The story today, Texas and Oklahoma have now made it official. They have informed Bob Bowlsby and the Big 12, we're done. This marriage is over in 2025. I think it's going to be difficult. I don't know who really announces that a relationship is over in 2025. I suspect that they'll figure out a way to get out beforehand. But it is official. They're done with the Big 12 at the end of this current contract. What do you make of all this? And, of course, you know, right now all the talk is them coming to the SEC. What do you assess the odds today of it really happening in this conference?
Well, I think it's amazing the way this has gone from 0 to 60, so to speak, in such a short period of time that, you know, it broke last week. Now,
I think it went from 0 to 260 is what it went. That's what it feels like.
Exactly. And so, obviously, this is something that didn't just begin. This is something that's been worked on for a while. But in terms of it being public, we've gotten there really quick. You know, when I first heard the news, I was a little bit skeptical, but the more you read, the more you talk to people, the more you think about the increased revenue that the SEC is going to get, the power that the SEC wields. You read all the time that when, in terms of power players in with conference commissioners, that Greg Sankey has the power of like all the other commissioners put together. And one of the things that the Big 12, those two schools out of the Big 12, Oklahoma and Texas, probably look at as their biggest disadvantage is they're not a member of the elite conference. And now with their brand, if they can also sell the SEC, I mean, goodness, then you're going to have even more of a separator with them and everybody else. I mean, who knows what the trickle-down effect is, but the money that's there with a TV contract that will be 3 or 4 times with the deal that the SEC has with ESPN and Disney, and the grant of rights deal that expires, to where now there is additional money there that they can multiply. I would expect now, I do think it's going to happen in the SEC, and I would expect, in line with all of the college football playoff moves, where before the last rotation, they're going to get out of that deal and I think implement the college football playoff. I would be surprised if, in sync with that, that this move didn't happen at the same time versus a 2025 down the road. So it's crazy, but I do think that's where we're headed. And look, people are like, oh, well, it'll be a 13-1 vote in the SEC to approve it if it hasn't already happened behind closed doors. But my thing is the SEC, the way they do this, and they always want to be presented all on the same page, if Texas A&M is the one dissenting vote, they're going to vote again and tell Texas A&M, you're voting for this, it's going to happen anyway, so we're presenting a 14-0 vote. So suck it up. We know what you want. This is how it's going to go out publicly. Even though everyone else will know, they want to present, and they always have, they want to present that unity within the conference, which is part of what helps make them so strong, along with everything else, of course.
Vince Ferrara is with us. Vince, tell me, take the money out of it and put that aside for a moment. The obvious answer is everybody gets more money. Tell me where you think Tennessee benefits from having Texas and Oklahoma in the league.
It's a great question, Willie. The direct benefit, I mean, the league is even more marquee. So, you know, you have those other brands to sell that you'll go up against. And, you know, as a lot of coaches would say, these are the kind of games that you come to Tennessee for, you know, to play those type of teams. There's plenty already in the SEC that you could say that about. I think potentially would be to maybe, depending on how all the divisions would shake out, that maybe you'd have a little bit more of a variety to your schedule rather than what a lot of fans really cringe about, and that's having to play Alabama every year. Now, I think one of the plans, the easiest plan to realign the divisions would be to put Oklahoma and Texas in the West, move Alabama and Auburn to the East, and move Missouri out West, and then that's how you do it. But some people are like, okay, so you're going to have Alabama, Georgia, and Florida all in one division, and then Oklahoma could have a free ride in the conference championship. Yeah, I've seen that theory out there. But then you still have A&M. You have Texas A&M, LSU. I mean, who knows? There's still some good teams out West. But if they were to do it another way, is if you do that, then you would add a conference game, and I think also remove the crossover game. So maybe there could be a way to not have as brutal of a schedule every year, which is strange to say when you're adding those kind of teams. But I that would be the one thing I would think of. And just the increased revenue. Tennessee has the biggest deficit, not deficit, but the smallest reserve in the SEC at last check. So you're bringing it, you're multiplying those dollars, you're increasing the brand even more. You're going to spread that wealth out, and Tennessee might be able to catch up. Of course, everybody else is getting just as rich or even richer, but at least you can make up some ground. So those would be, a few of the first things that would come to mind.
Yeah. Okay, let's get more specific. Let's just look at football. Does Tennessee have a better chance, a better pathway to a league championship and a national championship with these two teams in the league?
At first thought, no, because if that scenario happens with Alabama and Auburn in the East, the answer is no. I mean, they've had an open door that they haven't been able to bust through. As we know, during the Butch Jones era when the East was down, they couldn't do it then. When now you have, if you would have Alabama and Georgia in the same division, I mean, good luck with that unless you drastically change things and you can get close to their level in terms of recruiting. And they're a long way from that now. So, no, I don't think that path would be easier to win the division and win games. So, and now, who knows, maybe there's another way. I've seen like a four-team pod type of things to where maybe it could be a little bit easier and get a different path there. But, no, Willie, at first thought, I don't think this helps Tennessee win a division or the conference.
So it just seems to me, and I don't want to take all the time because there's so many Tennessee things we want to get to, but it just surprises me that everybody's jumping to say, yes, let's bring them in there because they're clouded by the money. But as far as competitive advantages, is it better? I don't know the answer is yes in a lot of cases. You just made the case for Tennessee. You can go down the list of about 8 or 9 teams, I think, in the league already who I don't know if they're going to have a better pathway to success in football, but let's leave it there for now. Chase and I were talking, Vince, on Friday about how Tennessee went through the entire media day and really didn't get into any specifics of where the investigation is, the self-investigation, what could be coming around the turn. I was surprised that there weren't more questions asked to Josh Heupel. Of course, he just came in, he inherited it, but the absolute mess just weeks before Danny White and then Josh Heupel were hired, it was like they waved a magic wand to have everybody just not even focus on it. And then that very day, there was an article that came out. What clarity did we have in terms of where the self-investigation is right now?
Well, Josh Heupel was asked about it in the local avails, and I think he might have done one other meeting or setting that might have come up. And he basically alluded to it getting close, and they think that they'll have some clarity. And he made sort of a 1 year type of reference without exactly saying that. That's the way it was kind of interpreted. So, you know, it sounds like that's where they're headed without him exactly spitting that out, that you know, they're wrapping this up, they're getting close, and then there might be a one-year type of self-imposed penalties, and then they can hopefully move on. Now, you know, there's no guarantee of that one, that they're going to, you know, be able to self-impose for 1 year and then have it be over with. Sometimes that's good enough, other times it's not. And then just hearing whether it's good enough or not from the NCAA is a completely different timetable. But I think whatever it is, they need to figure this out quickly, because I'm sure he's telling the university administration that this continues to hang over their head, and it is a challenge. I think he's admitted that, but they feel like they have other things to sell about the university. And then, oh, by the way, you know, it's still been very expensive for them over all this time. So I think they're getting close, but whether they'll be able to turn the page on it quickly when they do technically finish is still unknown.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville, joining us every Monday at noon. I was very impressed talking to Alante Taylor and Velus Jones Jr., but especially Alante Taylor, of just the leadership qualities that he has for that defense. And so much is discussed about the offense and what it's going to look like under Josh Heupel. But what about that defense? They lost a lot on that side of the ball. What can we truly expect as camp approaches and the season approaches?
Well, there's a whole ton of questions on that defense. And I know when that all-SEC team came out, I know that had to really hurt even more for Tennessee fans. They saw three guys there, and Taylor was one of them. I believe 13, Paxton Brooks, their punter's second team, and then Cade Mays on the offensive line as well. So, but Henry Toto, their starting linebacker the last 2 years, his first team in Alabama, where they had all the linebackers represented there. And, you know, they just don't have any proven playmakers there whatsoever. Very few games played. Well, they have some games played, but they might not have any starts. I have to double check on that, but very little experience, and they've had guys suspended, guys with spring, just a huge question mark about this team there at the linebacker position. Did have a transfer in and from Texas, transfer in from Michigan, so it's still a very thin group. We expect them to be multiple on defense, probably more of a four-man front than the three-man they did before. Personnel and opponent will probably dictate a lot of that. But it's hard when you want to be so multiple on defense, but yet you want to be simpler than what Pruitt did with these guys. So you're going to do all these different things, but then you want to simplify at the same time. So that's a challenge. And they don't have difference makers on the defensive line. A lot of turnover, bodies coming in and out. Secondary with Alante Taylor, probably, you know, one corner is where you feel best about. But, you know, there's still plenty of questions on the back end as well. Trayvon Flowers, the safety, has been around a while, has played some games, had some good games, but he's not all SEC caliber, I don't think. And, you know, there, some of the guys at the transfer portal that would have had even bigger roles. I think Keyshawn Lawrence, who went to Oklahoma. So, unless these guys can be developed like we haven't seen, I think this unit is going to struggle. And what we saw in the spring, even though there are a lot of guys missing, I think we'll be in sync with what the season will look like. The offense will be improved, and they'll put up points, but the defense will also give up a ton of points. Maybe similar to kind of Ole Miss last year without quite the level of explosiveness on offense. It's gonna be difficult for them, I think, at this point on defense.
Real quick, before we let you go, order of finish is always a fun topic of conversation. Where do you have the Vols in your order of finish in the SEC East? And then just give us the highlights from the East and the West.
Yeah, I had them exactly where the SEC put them. The only difference in the East, I had them at fifth. The only difference I have in either division from what the SEC media had predicted, which I guess is not a good sign, but based on the track record. But I the only difference is I have Missouri 3, Kentucky 4, strictly, even though they're very close, strictly based on Bazelak, the quarterback for Missouri, a lot more trust in him than what Kentucky brings to the table, both of them fairly easy schedules. But you know, Georgia 1, Florida 2, then a little gap to Kentucky, Missouri, Missouri 3, Kentucky 4, then Tennessee 5, then a gap to South Carolina 6, who I don't think has a very good roster at all. I think South Carolina will be closer to Vanderbilt at 7 than Tennessee at 5. And then in the West, exactly the way they had it laid out, Alabama 1, A&M 2, LSU 3, Ole Miss 4, Auburn 5, Arkansas 6, Mississippi State 7. I think some people are overestimating Mississippi State because they had some decent numbers defensively last year. I'm not as crazy about their quarterback, and I don't think they're going to be as stout defensively this year. So I had it laid out. And then, of course, Alabama chalk, but that's going to happen, and I think that would be the only play. How about people picking South Carolina to win the league?
Oh, come on.
You know, there are some others. I think Kentucky might have gotten a East Division pick. I mean, some of these people just trying to be different and just going way off the bar. I mean, stop it. It's silly.
Well, I'll tell you this. I did have Kentucky second in the East, and my rationale there, here's why. My rationale on that was I think Florida's schedule is going to get them, and so I think Kentucky could get that position just by default. I think their schedule is much more manageable than what Florida has to do. So that was really my rationale there.
Yeah, it typically is, and Florida lost a lot and questions at quarterback. So, yeah, I get that. But sometimes Dan Mullen's best coaching jobs is when people don't think he's got as good of a team.
True.
That at Mississippi State, his first year at Florida. So I kind of give him the benefit of the doubt that he'll figure some things out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Vince, thanks for the time as always. We'll do it again next week. Enjoy Champa Bay.
Certainly will. Get some vitamin D, some sunshine, and bring it back. Thanks, Kat.
Absolutely. Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the sports animal in Knoxville, joins us every Monday at noon as football season is approaching. Cannot wait for that. We'll have much more coming here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Don't forget Nashville SC fans tonight on 94.9 during the 7 o'clock hour, NSC Backstage featuring Nashville SC players and coaches. You can watch online via the game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, good stuff from Vince Ferrara down in Champa Town or Champa Bay. However you want to call it.
Tidal Town,
Champa Bay, whatever the heck you want to call it. But they've been doing a lot of celebrating down there. But right now, the SEC may be celebrating if Texas and Oklahoma. Who's happier if it's to happen? The SEC, Greg Sankey, or Texas and Oklahoma? Who would be happier if this marriage worked? I would say Texas and Oklahoma.
They would
be the happiest. Although
I would say for them, if you're doing this for football, be careful what you wish for. I disagree with those that think they have a better chance of winning a national title coming into the SEC. Be careful what you wish for.
Well, I understand why you're saying that because they have to compete with Alabama, basically. But with the new playoff structure, I mean, it's just going to mean that the SEC was already going to get probably 3 to 4 teams in every year. Now they're going to get 4 to 5. I mean, so
that's
anything
bad.
Can happen in the playoffs.
That's not good for college football. If I'm the college football playoff, I don't like setting it up that way where you have that many teams from one conference. You got to have the attention of the entire country on your playoff.
You keep saying
80% of your audience is only focused on one league. That's not good for the game.
Okay.
It's not good for the sport.
And you keep saying that. You keep saying that none of this is good for college football or college sports or whatever. Who's stopping it? Like, nobody's stepping up and saying, like, no, we got to we got to stop this. This is awful.
It's because nobody has the authority to do that. There's no commissioner. I think if there was a czar of football, then you would try to prevent this kind of thing. I think there needs to be some force trying to keep competitive balance between the country, between the conferences, and between the overall picture of the country.
I agree. I've been
saying
for years.
The golden egg is yes, but they don't. But there is none, and so this happens.
Yeah,
it's not good.
But this is it. I mean, the train has left the station. So I mean, it's happening. But I just don't hear powerful people that could make a difference stopping it, because they just, it's like, all right, well, we're in the Power Five, so we're cool, or Power Four, or whatever it's going to become. So, all right, we're good. Now we got to get our stuff together, and these super conferences are going to form. I mean, in 5 years, it'll be the Big Ten with 16 teams, the Pac-16, the SEC, and the ACC. That's what it'll be.
Probably so.
And they'll all have 16.
I don't think there's any doubt, because Big 12 is going down to what, 8 teams now?
They're the Big 8 again.
Big 8, and they're going to lose teams. I mean, you think Kansas is going to stay in there?
Kansas is probably, they're already talking to the Big 10.
I was to say they're probably going to bring their talent somewhere else, because they're a blue blood basketball program, so they've got something to offer. There's no doubt about that. So, I mean, let me ask you something. Do you think Missouri and Texas A&M, do you think that people could have said the same thing about, why would you go to the SEC? Like, you think you're going to get better? Do you think they would rather be in the old setup or their current setup? What do you think they would choose all day long?
I've given that a lot of thought. I looked at the numbers. Mike DeCourcy had an interesting article, you know, regarding Texas A&M. I'm just talking about football success. I don't think they've had more success in the SEC than they had before in all their years. It's about a wash. You know, they've been good in the SEC, but they've never won it. They've never come close to winning it, really. I guess when they had Johnny Manziel, they had some great teams, but they still couldn't win it. With the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, who was a pretty special player. Missouri, they had a couple of really good years before they got to the SEC.
That's not true. They won the division 2 years in a row when they came to the SEC.
Yep.
Yeah, I know, but they were overmatched in the championship game in a lot of ways.
They won the division. They were playing for an SEC title.
To remember when they had a year when they had Chase Daniel before they got to the SEC, where they were on the verge of being in the championship picture. I'm trying to remember that.
Is that the year that them and Kansas played? And they were 1-2.
Yes, I think I think Chase Daniel was the quarterback.
That was like 2010, 2011, I think.
Jeremy Maclin at receiver.
Yeah.
I see
Missouri as the same. I see them as sort of the same. I think it's.
I would tell you their answer is they are very, very happy with their decision, and going to the SEC was the best thing. Is when they came.
No, that's what he's talking about.
Okay.
Though.
I was going to say, I didn't think it was right before they came. I would tell you that I think they would unequivocally, without any hesitation, say the move to the SEC was the best thing ever for them, because they get more attention. They've made more money. When did Texas A&M do all their expanding? When they were in the other conference, or when they moved to the SEC and got tons of attention and their profile went way up? And the next thing you know, they're building bigger and bigger and a bigger stadium and better facilities. It was all when they were in the SEC. I would tell you without any hesitation, they would answer it was the best move they ever made.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Does Manziel win the Heisman out of Texas A&M in 2012 if he's not in the SEC?
Probably not, because he beat Alabama, and that's what started that humongous leap towards that discussion, beating Alabama and Tuscaloosa.
I still see Missouri as being sort of an outlier, way out on an island by themselves. I don't know if they're getting the attention. I wonder what their fans feel like when they used to be. They had the great border war with Kansas. I just think they had better rivalries in their old setup. I'd love to know what their fans think of this. I've never really felt that there's a great chemistry between Missouri and the SEC. I wonder how their fans feel about it.
I don't know. I mean,
it's a good question. I don't know.
It's a very good question. It's a fair question.
Like, who's Missouri? Who do they look forward to playing every year in the SEC? The rival. Who's the big rival? They don't have one.
Yeah,
probably Georgia.
But yeah, yes. Sure, Georgia. Yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
I understand Texas A&M's motivation was to get out of and be unique amongst the teams in Texas, and that's why they were the one team that's standing up and banging on the table saying, please don't let this happen, because they're going to lose that if Texas comes in. But I still – they have not – yeah, they're pumping resources in. They've got all that stuff, but wouldn't they have been doing that anyway? They've always been – a major player.
Well,
in
why weren't they
football.
Doing it? They did it when they came to this conference. So why weren't they doing it before?
They did do it before.
Really? They 300
you don't
remember, $400 million.
They were a very
in before
sure, they,
SEC.
Relatively speaking, they've always been a big dollar, high profile, major college Division I program. It was just in the Big 12 and not in the SEC.
I would say
they had the 12th man. They played
spending.
On New Year's Day bowl games. They played in the Cotton Bowl a lot. They've had a lot of success.
Okay,
but they still did it.
I haven't seen are they in the national championship picture this year? And now you add Texas
yes,
and Oklahoma
yes.
to it.
Yes, they are. They are.
That is true.
They're in the national championship contention.
But
before they've ever played
a
game. But we'll see.
Yeah,
it's all got to play out. But their team is loaded, and they feel very good about it. Does that mean that's going to translate? I have no clue. But I'll tell you right now, they are in that discussion. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to – and again, you're entitled to your opinion, Willie, but you know, you want to say it's bad for – college football, what's been the benefit for Texas A&M and Missouri? And they still did it. They made that decision that, you know, hey, this is going to be better for us. And I bet if you asked people in the know at both those schools, A&M especially, they're going to sit there and they're going to go, yeah, we absolutely are glad we did it. We don't regret it at all. It has been huge for our university from a financial and a notoriety standpoint. Because even if you're one of the worst teams in the league, just to say, hey, we're in the SEC, pulls a lot. I mean, that matters a lot. So, you know, and I think for other sports, you'll see a benefit too. Even though, you know, Missouri basketball, I think has benefited from it. They didn't have the teams that what year was it they were in the tournament that made that run and. Austin Huff was here about to lose his mind.
Oh, was that the Norfolk State loss? They were a two seed?
Yeah, that might have been it. In 2011?
I think it was a little bit later than that.
Well, then it was.
It was
actually,
the last year in the Big 12.
It was 2012.
So they won the Big 12 title.
And then that fall, they joined the SEC. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep, that was it.
I think they've had a lot more success when they were in the big – back in the day in the Big 8. I look at Nebraska. Has Nebraska been have they benefited from being in the Big Ten? I just think the old Big 12 was better than this new picture that we're looking at here as we keep evolving towards 16 teams.
All right, we'll come back.
I think better for the individual teams and for college football in general.
We'll wrap up hour number three on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville Sounds baseball on 94.9. Tomorrow, the Sounds begin a six-game homestand at First Horizon Park against Columbus. Triple-A affiliate for the Cleveland Guardians. Sounds baseball on 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans.
You sound so defeated with that.
I took Friday off just because I needed to mourn.
I needed time.
I saw a break.
I saw a guy at a bar the other night in Indians gear, and I just said, "Hey, go Guardians!" And he just looked at me like, "Yeah."
Never talked to one person.
It's not the same.
Sweet.
Here's my thing.
I didn't say sweet, but I looked at it and I didn't cringe. I think it'll be okay. But that's how I think the real test is going to be over time. Like, no matter what it was, don't you think, was anybody going to be wowed by the new thing, whatever it was?
I think people were expecting spiders is what they were expecting. And
so spiders, you think, would have had a more popular response?
I don't know if it was more, if it would be more popular, if it just would be more, yeah, okay, that's what I expected. So maybe less groaning.
Maybe.
I don't know if it would have been like throwing parties for spiders, but I think just people had resigned to the fact that it's going to be spiders. And
well,
then they came out of left field with Guardians.
I think they came out of right field.
Right field.
My whole issue with it wasn't necessarily calling them the Guardians.
Well, if you read the story, actually what you said is correct, because the way the stadium is configured, they're the Guardians of traffic, and so right field would be appropriate.
Okay. Well, how about that? It's just the fact that they, like, the font is basically the same. They just changed it from Indians to Guardians. I know they have this weird-looking logo with the G that, you know,
that was weird.
I'm
not sure about.
But
the name Guardians and the everything else, the way that fits, I think it's all right.
I think it could change everything.
Got to give it some time.
Change the colors and all that if you're going to do it. But
you want to change the colors? How do you feel about that, Darren? As a Cleveland baseball fan, would you have wanted them to completely start over and do something completely different, or do you like that they're trying to just make sort of a soft change but keep some of the traditions?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously love the colors red, white, and blue, so I prefer those colors.
I like their colors. I like how their uniforms look. You don't really have to do an overhaul of your uniforms this way.
Yeah, I would have been really surprised. I think that would have been a lot for people to take on. Hey, now the Guardians and we're purple and, you know, gold. What?
Yeah.
You know,
that
would have
been too much.
You'd
have
people going crazy. So I understand that, and I'm glad they didn't change the color scheme. I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about this so many times on the show. More times than not, you change anything, and people initially are going to go, I hate it, right? Oh, my gosh, I hate it.
Of course, there's always that group on Twitter. This is terrible.
Rarely do the masses go, love it, absolutely love it. I mean, rarely, right? And so you would expect typically for it to come out and there'd be groans, which I had groans, and I cried for 2 days. But I'm over it, as you can tell. I'm past it.
You know what's going to help you?
I
did this for you. I made some calls
tequila
over the weekend, and I got the people with the Cleveland Guardians to send me an advance copy of the new song. And I think the song is going to get you fired up.
This could cheer you up, Darren.
Guardian. Fever. It starts from the very first inning. Guardian. Fever. Each game is a brand new beginning. It's the hits, the homers, the double plays. It's how you feel when we win. So catch Guardian. Fever. Be a believer with the Cleveland Guardians.
So is that going to be for the fall? Is that going to be?
That's got to be.
The new theme song?
That's your underdog theme.
Okay. I don't know how I'm going to feel saying be a believer, because I'm not sure I'm going to be a believer.
Give it a month or two. You'll be a believer.
Get used to it.
Guess it'll depend on my record.
So this is what I don't know, because I have never been to, and I guess if I'm going to go to an Indians game in Cleveland, I got to get on it. I've seen them play in Cincinnati, but I've never seen them in Cleveland. Do they actually play this song still?
I don't think they've played that for years. That's from way back.
One,
in the 80s.
I haven't been to a game there in a long time, so I don't know. I mean, it's not like if you play it, the people were going to be going, "What is this?" I mean, everybody knows the song. Do they still play it during games? I don't know. Like I said, I haven't been there in a while.
Okay, I was just curious. I really have.
It's
no
a
idea.
Fantastic park, especially for the age. You know, opening in '94. I mean, you would expect it to be outdated.
The Jake.
Yeah. But it's a great ballpark. But I don't know if they still play that.
Well, they've probably taken care of
it. Maybe in the pro shop you hear it when you're standing in line to buy something. Oh. I don't know.
Wasn't that song from the 80s? Wasn't that like pre Jacobs Field?
Oh yeah, I had that
70s.
On a 45.
Yeah,
I had that song on
vinyl. That's going way back, right?
Yeah,
so I don't know how long it lasted.
Yeah, I played that on a record player. That song.
It was on the same.
You think I'm joking? I'm not. I had it on a 45.
It was on the same greatest hits album as Meet the Mets. You could get them both.
Yeah,
San Diego Superchargers. That was in there. Great fight songs.
Sure.
Those were when great songs, fight songs were invented that decade.
Hey, Tampa Bay.
The Bucks know how to shine.
Sure.
I love those. Like, they're so cheesy, but they're so good at the same time. Like, they are like the Houston Oilers and Miami Dolphins use the exact same song. They just change the team names. But it's so awful and cheesy that it's great.
Willie, we've got a mutual friend that's just blowing us up texting. I mean,
he's killing us. He's all.
I mean, there's been
yeah.
like 69 texts during this little segment here.
Nice.
He's a diehard Cleveland guy through and through, and you know the emotions are still running high.
I mean, he is right. He is 600 over 500 is his numbers right now. He is running on tilt. He is running sky high is a good way of putting it. All right, we'll come back. We'll switch gears. We'll talk a little hockey to begin the fourth and final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.